Hello everyone, and welcome to Guildcast, the only podcast that pwns enough to be endorsed by Loudon Swain.
Hey everyone, welcome back to this 57th episode of Guildcast for December 2nd, 2006. I'm your host, Sean. In this week's episode, we're going to cover another new feature of Chapter 3, and that's the inscriptions and the insignias. First, though, some people who asked to be mentioned this week include Gins and Roses, Dragon Slays, and Slay's Apprentice. As for game updates, there were actually quite a few, and some pretty major ones, too, but I'll start out with on Tuesday, November 28th, is when ArenaNet began preparations for the Chinese closed beta. So it looks like we're going to have another region added to the Guild Wars world. And then on Thursday, November 30th, there was also a pretty big update where they started making preparations for the Domain of Anguish event. They added two new quests in Istin and six new quests in the Realm of Torment. They modified monster behaviors so that they now prefer targets within their guard ranges. They fixed several reported bugs with follower NPCs in order to improve their combat performance. They removed the kiting behavior of henchmen in the first round of basic training in order to give new players an easier introduction to PvP. And then there were also some undocumented changes, both on the 30th and on December 1st. And they include the fact that Raza, the new ritualist hero, is now available for unlocking at the Priests of Valtazar. Now, when they first introduced him, he was available for 50,000 faction, which, from what I understand, was a mistake, because now they fixed it, and he's now available for 6,000 faction. They also changed the miniature Varish, which you get with the Collector's Edition of Nightfall, and they made her bigger. She's about the size of Prince Rurik now, the mini Prince Rurik, and they also gave her a weapon now. She wields a scythe. The Xunlei tournament agents are NPCs that are now walking around Kamadan telling the world about the Wintergreen tournament. When an NPC has a quest reward to offer or is part of a quest and you need to talk to them to move on, they now display a downward pointing green arrow instead of that traditional green exclamation point that has been with Guild Wars since the beginning. Not really sure why they changed that, but it's certainly there now. Torment creatures created by the spell Call to the Torment no longer award Lightbringer points. Now, this is the inevitable nerfing to the AFK farming that people were doing for Lightbringer points. Probably the last week or so, maybe 2 weeks, in Nightfall and Jahai, they were doing it mostly. This was, of course, against the rules. You know, anything where it's considered botting, I guess you could say, you know, where you just sit back and don't really play the game, and you're still earning points for it. So it was, like I said, it was inevitable that they would nerf this. So that's been nerfed on the 30th. Anyway, Freezing Gust now correctly causes damage instead of the slow effect when the target is affected by any water magic hex. Previously, some hexes such as Shardstorm and Shatterstone were not recognized and caused the slow effect instead. Archivist Zithus and Commander Thurnus in the Gate of Torment now have dialogue, and Churizek has been re-added there. I think last show I mentioned that they removed him. Keeper Milzish has been added to the Abaddon's Gate for a quest relating to the Domain of Anguish. The And a Hero Shall Lead Them quest was also changed. Only Alonian-born characters now require the rank of Sunspear General in order to complete it, whereas foreign characters may continue without this requirement. And finally, good demon hunting is now fixed and can be completed now. Now let me go back to this new elite mission that I just mentioned, and I'll talk a little bit more about this. This is what the official GuildWars.com website had to say about this as its initial announcement. Players who have completed Nightfall will be given access to this elite area through the Chantry of Secrets on Friday, December 1st. You will find four separate areas for players to explore, nearly a dozen quests, new armor upgrade options, a system for acquiring novel weapons, and of course a compelling mission as well. Now, the Domain of Anguish is located within the Mists in the Realm of Torment, and that access is granted through the statue of the Goddess of Truth in the Chantry of Secrets. The statue is hidden in an area within the outpost that's behind a gate that can only be accessed by characters who have completed all mandatory storyline missions. When you talk to the Seer of Truth near that statue, that's when you're granted access to the Gate of Anguish, which is basically like an outpost. So there's a lot of people are asking about this in the Chantry of Secrets, if there's like fighting that goes on from the time that you talk to the statue to this Gate of Anguish, and there is not. There's as soon as you talk to the Seer of Truth next to the statue, you go to another outpost. So you don't really have to worry about getting a party together. And actually, you can't even bring henchmen in there anyway. So once in the Gate of Anguish, you'll find the Weapons Keeper, who has some great tormented weapons that he'll give you in trade for an Arm Brace of Truth. Now, I'm not positive about this, but I think this is something that you get from within the mission itself, or possibly just within one of the areas of the Domain of Anguish. Now, this is all still brand new stuff here, so I don't really have too many exact details yet, but I'm sure I'll talk more about this on a future show once I get to the point where I've actually beat the mission. The armor upgrades that they speak of in the news announcement are for heroes, not your character, so keep that in mind. It's basically like primeval armor for your heroes. Now, I know it sounded a little bit misleading in the news announcement, but they've actually corrected that in a new announcement about it, where they say that it's hero armor. Now, what you need to provide that hero armor NPC is things called primeval armor remnants, which I'm guessing are from within the mission itself, but again, that's not confirmed or anything. That's just a guess. And then also there's a Keeper of Whispers in there that gives you a reward if you give him one of each of the Anguish gemstones. Now, these aren't gems like the diamond, sapphire, and ruby that a lot of people were speculating. These are special gemstones that they're actually also used in a quest to unlock Raza, the ritualist hero. Supposedly, they're going to be used for other things in that area as well. Now, while I was playing in one of these new quests, I did see someone get one of these gemstones as a drop. So I do know for sure that they're drops, and they look like gold drops. And if you haven't tried these quests out and the mission yet, just be aware that they are insanely hard. I mean, I spent a good chunk of Friday night just trying to beat one of the four quests that you have to do, even to just get into the mission itself. So I didn't even, you know, I spent, like I said, hours, and I didn't even get to play in the mission. So it's just really crazy. It's if you think those last few missions of Nightfall are hard, just wait. This is really crazy. My Ellie is the one that I was playing with, and she has 420 hit points, and I was repeatedly getting killed in like two hits. I mean, it was just crazy, and that's with a Lightbringer rank of 4, so just prepare yourself. It did seem like there were several people in there forming trapper groups, and I don't know if that works for sure, but if it does, I know I'm bringing my Ranger through Nightfall next. There's been a new Winter's Day art contest announced this week also, with some pretty sweet prizes. I always tell myself I'm going to enter one of these, but this one is just about too good to pass up, I think. According to GuildWars.com, it says, create an original piece of art with a traditional winter holiday theme and a Guild Wars flavor. You may draw your own art using any media at your disposal. You may also use or incorporate screenshots, renders, concept art, icons, photographs, or any other Guild Wars images to create your entry. Now, as for prizes for this contest, 10 winners will have their creations presented on the Guild Wars website and will receive one of the following prizes. First through fifth prize will get a Guild Wars Nightfall Collector's Edition signed by the Guild Wars development team, along with the Guild Wars Nightfall t-shirt, approximate retail value of $80. 6th through 10th place will get Guild Wars Nightfall Standard Edition, signed by the Guild Wars development team also, and they will also get the Guild Wars Nightfall t-shirt. The approximate retail value of that is $60. Deadline for entries to be received via email or postal mail is noon Pacific Standard Time on Thursday, December 14th, 2006. There are some other things I wanted to mention this week also. A few episodes back, I talked a little bit about a Guildcast football tournament, and while that hasn't begun yet officially, we are still trying to get some more participation in that. So if you think you'd be interested, check out the rules page that I'll put a link to again in today's show notes, and also the tournaments board on the Guildcast forums. As soon as we get enough people interested, we'll start the tournament. Even if we don't get too many more people, we might still do a scaled-down version of it. Also, I forgot if I mentioned this before or not, but one of my guild's officers, Fergus the Ostler, is doing a video contest now also. The complete rules for that are in the contest boards in the Guildcast forums also. And I know I've talked about this a few times before, but you guys really have to check out the Guildcast wiki if you haven't already at www.guildcast.com/wiki, W-I-K-I. Thanks to the help and contributions of people like Rob Loach, Lem, Hallway Giant, and several others, it's become quite a clean, functional little wiki. If you have any questions at all about an episode or a host or a topic or a song or anything at all relating to the show itself, that's where it would be. So I would encourage all of you, if you have a question, to check that out first. I get asked a lot of questions in game pertaining to the podcast, and this wiki is exactly what you need to answer your questions. There's even a handy little search feature that lets you search for anything that may have been discussed on the show. Of course, it's not 100% complete yet. Some of the shows just have very basic show notes, but others like episode 40 is one, and I think there's another one right around there that have complete word-for-word transcripts that you can read along with while listening to the show, if that's something you'd be into. Again, that's www.guildcast.com/wiki.
Hey everyone, this is Mirage. I just want to say that for episode 56, if you need anyone to yell at for the stupid the happy birthday song thingy, yeah, that was my fault. It was all my idea, so just scream at me for the most lag-tacular happy birthday song ever.
Hi Sean, my in-game name is Ed Steele. I have found your podcast quite recently, but I'm listening from episode one, trying to catch up. It's really funny to listen all about the special events, since I missed them all. And I really look forward to this new Christmas even this year. I hope it's going to be nice. It's also really cool to hear, like, when you get all excited about features we take for granted now, like material storage and observe. And I also have some suggestion for the show. Maybe you could talk about a little bit about guild etiquette, like for new players. What's good, what's bad, like spamming and trading in all channel. Also, could you give some tips on controls and hand placements? Like, do you use mouse for walking or and targeting or for skills? Thanks. Anyway, the show is great and good luck for future episodes.
Hey, Sean, this is a Drunken Assassin. The quest that you do to get from Lion's Arch to wherever you go in Alona, I can't find the guy to get from. I think his name's like Lion Guard Figo or something like that, F-I-G-O. And I was just wondering if anyone knew where to find him. Thanks for the show. Bye.
So let's see. We've got inscriptions, and we've got insignias. Well, which one's which? Insignias go on weapons, right? No. That's inscriptions. Inscriptions go on items, and insignias go on armor. Yeah, I used to always get those confused too. So, let's try to think of a few ways to keep them straight. How about this? Okay, inscription is like a script, like a scroll, right? And scrolls are offhand items sometimes, so there's the connection. Okay, never mind. How about inscriptions rhymes with weapons? No, it doesn't. Wait. Okay, let's forget that. Okay, let's try insignias. Let's see. We need to make up a little jingle that'll help us remember. Like, you know that 30 days has September one? I can never remember exactly. Okay, insignias are... Wait, what even rhymes with insignia? Okay, scratch all that. Let's go with the literal definitions. Maybe that'll help you out. An insignia is like a badge or a sign. And you can't wear a sign on your weapon. You wear it on your armor, right? An inscription is like a marking or a carving into something. So with that, just think of like a special marking on a sword or a staff or something like that. Like, I don't know if you guys watch that show Lost, but I love that show. And on there, they got Mr. Echo, and he has that staff with all the carvings on it. Those are inscriptions. And it's a staff and not armor, right? Easy enough? Okay. Let's see what GuildWiki has to say about it. Maybe they know a little bit more than me. Inscriptions are a type of salvageable weapon upgrade. They were introduced with the release of the Nightfall campaign and replaced some of the inherent weapon modifiers used in Prophecies and Factions, which are not salvageable. There are no crafters or traders for inscriptions. They can only be obtained from loot. You can salvage an inscription from any drop that has one. The inscription is a guaranteed salvage with expert salvage kits. However, the item has a chance of being destroyed in the process. Inscriptions have a value of 25 gold when sold to a merchant, so it's generally worth using an expert salvage kit to salvage the inscription from a cheaper object and selling it separately. An identification kit can also be used to reveal the actual value of the inscription, which is often higher than the cost of identifying the inscription. To attach an inscription to a weapon, first double-click on the inscription, then double-click on the item that you want to attach it to. The target item must be of the designated type given in the description. Furthermore, it must have an inscription slot. This slot can either be free, in which case the description reads inscription none, or taken by any other inscription. In the latter case, the old inscription will be overwritten. If you want to keep the old inscription, you may salvage it to get the free slot, but just remember, you have that risk of destroying the target item. And note that items from Prophecies and Factions and from the Realms of the Gods have not been converted to the new system, which means that they never come with an inscription slot. Looking over this list on GuildWiki, they have a complete list of all of the inscriptions available in the game and what they do exactly. So I would definitely check that out if I were you. But what's funny about it is that ArenaNet made a lot of these inscriptions with some a little bit of humor behind the name. And a lot of them have some pretty obscure references. Like, let's see, we have Don't Call It a Comeback. That's a LL Cool J song from Mama Said Knock You Out. And Don't Fear the Reaper is a reference to an old Blue Oyster Cult song. Let's see, there's a few other ones. Hail to the King is from Army of Darkness. Great movie. Let's see. A couple of these are stretches. Like they're saying Leaf on the Wind is likely a reference to the Firefly movie Serenity. Knowing is Half the Battle. That's a good one. That was a quote at the end of every episode of G.I. Joe. I used to love G.I. Joe. Like this one here is a little bit of a stretch. Life is Pain is likely a reference to The Princess Bride. Master of My Domain and Serenity Now. Those are great because they're both references to old Seinfeld episodes. Riders on the Storm, that's a song by The Doors. Run for Your Life, they say here it may be named after a Beatles song, but I don't know, that's a pretty common phrase. Seems like that's another stretch. Show Me the Money, that's a good one from the movie Jerry Maguire. But I would definitely check out this list. It's kind of funny the way people have speculated on what each one of these inscriptions mean. So anyway, now on to the insignias. An insignia is an upgrade item applied to armor that is available for armor sets crafted in Alona and also in the PvP equipment panel. Insignias provide bonuses to armor sets. For example, the Radiant insignia adds extra energy in addition to the base statistics of the armor. Prior to Guild Wars Nightfall, insignia effects were inherent in certain armor sets. By separating the insignia from the armor set, the player can now have any of the insignia bonuses on any armor set they choose. This allows for the combination of any functionality with any armor art. Insignias are the prefix on a piece of armor, so you can also have a rune suffix on the same piece of armor. Some insignias will have different bonuses when applied to different areas of the body. It's also important to note that insignias may not be applied to armor purchased in Tyria or Kanta. This is because all armor in Kanta Interior has the prefix already added when you buy it. For example, Druid's armor for the Ranger has the energy bonus you would receive from adding a radiant insignia to a blank Alonian armor. Insignias can also be applied to blank obsidian armor crafted after the October 25th update. Now, this is something to really keep in mind because a lot of people are trying to scam here, where they're trying to sell insignias in places like Ascalon City and trying to convince people that it'll work on their Tyrian armor when, of course, that's not true at all. So be very aware of both insignias and inscription scams. While hunting for some information on insignias and inscriptions in the realm of PvP, I came across an excellent little article in the recent edition of the Guild Wars PvP Primer. If you haven't checked out that PvP Primer that they have probably just about once a week on guildwars.com, check that out, especially if you're into PvP, even hardcore players. If you're really hardcore into PvP, I would definitely check that out because they have some great information on there, and it's straight from the developers, so you can't go wrong there. Anyway, this one talks about weapon mods, runes, and insignias, and their role in PvP, so I thought I'd just read a little bit from their insignia section of that article. They talk about the profession-specific insignia. Each piece of armor can have one insignia and only one rune on it. Some of these stack, others don't. Some insignia and runes are restricted to certain professions, while others can be applied to the armor of any profession. Let's start with the assassin. The different insignias grant bonuses against general physical damage and specific types of physical damage. The infiltrator's insignia is used to sneak into the guild lord area because it reduces damage you take while in there. Also, if an archer uses pin down to cripple you, it won't last as long. This could save you if the other team sends someone back to deal with your infiltration attempt. That's why it's called the infiltrator's insignia. Now onto the Dervish. The Windwalker's insignia should fit most Dervish builds. While the Forsaken insignia requires less investment, you lose the armor bonus if anyone else on your team decides to enchant you. As for the Elementalist, although the Prismatic insignia can augment the armor leveled most, it doesn't fit with many Elementalist builds. Most Ellies focus on pouring attribute points into one or two lines. Having 9 or higher in all 4 attributes is exceedingly rare for an Elementalist. As such, the Pyromancer and the Aeromancer insignias might be good choices. Fire and air damage are quite common, and having armor against them could come in useful. Now onto the Mesmer. The Mesmer has several potentially useful insignia selections. The Virtuoso's insignia, in particular, is easy to trigger. However, it loses effectiveness if you have to kite, so another selection might be better depending on your build and your team. For the Monk, the Anchorite's insignia can be hard to use right, but it can give a decent armor bonus. And unlike the Blessed insignia, which adds armor while enchanted, this armor bonus stays with you even if you lose all enchantments. Sometimes this helps more against a spike than the Blessed insignia would, because spikers tend to remove enchantments from their target. For the Necromancer, the Necromancer has interesting options available for armor insignias. Each one triggers different armor under different situations, but the Bloodstained insignia actually reduces the casting time of spells that target corpses. For a Minion Master, this is a tremendous benefit. For the Paragon has one special insignia, Centurions. It grants extra armor while under the effect of any shout, echo, or chant. If you're playing a Paragon, chances are you plan to use at least one of these three skill types, so this armor insignia should be effective. For even more armor, consider using the Warrior Shout Watch Yourself. Combined with the Centurion's Insignia, this gives a Paragon quite a bit of armor. For the Ranger, we have the Scout's Insignia, which gives extra armor when using a preparation. This armor works against both physical and elemental damage, so even though it's plus 10 instead of the plus 15 that you can get against specific elements, it pays off more in the long run. For the Ritualist, like the Necromancer, the Ritualist has varied options for extra armor, all of them viable. It depends mostly on the build you have. For example, if you plan to use spirits, the Shaman's insignia would make the most sense. For a warrior, the Stone Fist insignia is useful for any knockdown ability on your skill bar. Common uses include the Hammer Warrior, Shock Axe Warrior, or Bull Strike. The extra second of knockdown makes a big difference because it lets you execute a longer attack chain in a shorter period of time than if the target were actively running from you. The Lieutenant's insignia is useful as a form of a hex counter, but it does carry a damage penalty with it. Consider, though, that many hexes shut down warrior damage completely, so the 5% reduction in damage from Lieutenant's insignia could be worth it if shutdown hexes don't stick on you as long. To be most effective, a warrior should constantly do damage, so anything that gets rid of hindering hexes helps a warrior do a better job. Also, you may have noticed the PvP character creation process has changed dramatically with the introduction of Nightfall. It looks a little bit confusing at first, but anyone experienced in PvP character creation can easily decipher the new procedure. First off, you don't equip your PvP character in the creation process anymore. After you've actually created your character completely, you're then put in, like, the Temple of Balthazar, and you press I for your inventory, and you'll see up in the top left-hand side of the window, you'll see a thing that says PvP equipment, and it's a little button that you press, and from here you can pick your weapons and armor from a new tabbed menu, complete with any inscriptions, insignias, mods, or runes, or anything like that that you may have unlocked on your account. They made it this way so that you can save and load your equipment setups very easily, and it does come in pretty handy. In this week's farm report, I wanted to go over a pretty simple way to gain Balthazar faction, although you can only get 2,000 a day this way, but it's through the Zacian Challenge Arenas on the Battle Isles. You can use Balthazar faction for unlocking anything from skills, item mods, and heroes on your account for PvP use only. But my favorite use of Balthazar faction, and the whole reason I do this in the first place, is for skill unlocks for my heroes to use. I use this faction farming method just about every day to get my 2k a day. Now let me point out that there are quicker ways to gain faction, and there are certainly ways to gain more than 2k a day, but this is an extremely easy method, especially for those of us who may not be into PvP as much and don't want to really mess around with stuff like team arenas or random arenas, but you still want to unlock skills on your account without spending oodles of gold at the skill trainer. Okay, so first you'll need Nightfall. Yeah, sorry about that, but you'll need some good heroes. Henchies will work occasionally, but heroes work so much better for this, and they just work more efficiently and more effectively. What I do is I do this two different ways on two accounts, so I'll be sure to point out variations as I go, because one of my accounts doesn't have all the heroes unlocked that I need. You'll first want to make a PvP-only ranger. If you don't have an extra slot for this, and you already have a PvE ranger, then that, of course, will work, but I like having the one character always set aside with exactly what he needs and with the heroes set up how I need them and always set up at the same location, so I don't need to go through any kind of preparation each time I want to do this. Also, if you do have a PvE ranger, just make sure that your heroes are level 20. Secondary profession won't really matter here, as well as the secondaries for the rest of your heroes, but preferably you need Margaret the Sly, Acolyte Jin, and Dunkaro. If you don't have Margaret or Jin, I like to substitute Elias and just make him a minion master. That works fairly well also. I do that on one of my accounts. Even if you only have the starting heroes unlocked and you don't have the rangers yet, you can always change two of their secondaries to ranger, and it'll work for a while, but a total of three rangers and a monk is the best scenario here. Okay, so you're going to want any and all trapping skills that you have unlocked. This is a complete trapper's build, if you haven't guessed that already. You don't need any reses at all. If done right, you will probably have flawless victories every time, so you don't have to worry about anything like that. Now put all of your attribute points in wilderness survival, marksmanship, and expertise. And if you have any left over, put them in beast mastery. For my build, I bring along Barrage as my elite, and it works kind of like a general attack that I do while my traps are recharging. And then for traps, I have Flame Trap, Snare, Dust Trap, Viper's Nest, Tripwire, and Barbed Trap. Basically any traps that you can get your hands on. And then in the last slot, I'll put up a spirit like a Winnowing or a Favorable Winds or something like that. What I do is I use this exact same build for my other two rangers, and then I'll alternate the spirits, but the rest of the traps and everything will be exactly the same, even in the same order, which makes it a lot easier. You can vary your hero's builds just a little bit according to what you have available, but don't worry about things like healing or interruption prevention or anything like that. Just trust me on this. Now for Dunkaro, you're going to want to give him a quick, low-energy healing build, but make sure that they're the ones that he can use on himself and not labeled as target other ally. Like, you don't want to use heal other in this build, because he's not going to be healing the trappers. They're not even going to be getting hit. He's going to be healing himself. Also, give him at least two hex removers and then skip the res, like with the other ones. Don't give him anything that creates AoE damage either, like Shield of Judgment or anything like that. He's working as the self-healing bait here, basically. And by the way the monk targeting AI works in this game, it's pretty foolproof. So be sure to set him on passive also for two reasons. One, so that he won't waste time trying to attack with his piddly little wand. And two, so that he'll run around and around in the back area, which will make the opponents chase him and basically run into more traps. It works out really well that way. So now you're ready to begin. What you do is you go to the Zacian Challenge with your heroes and you click Select Mission. I usually keep the arena selection on random just to, you know, spice it up a bit, because it can get kind of monotonous doing this over and over. But if you're looking for the easiest one to start out with, I would pick the Shiver Peak Arena, just because it's the doorway is narrow for laying traps, and the back area is pretty small, so there's not a lot of places where the enemies can hide or run away. And then what you do is you select Illusionary Weaponry Team as your opponent, and then you begin. Once you get this build down, and maybe want to try something a little more challenging, you can try the other AI opponents, but you'll soon find that the Illusionary Weaponry Mesmers are the easiest to get flawless every time. I like to open my two ranger heroes' skill bars and put them off to the side right on top of each other, so that as soon as I load in, I run up to the doorway and I just go down the line. I lay the first trap, and then I click on the ranger's first trap, and then the next ranger's first trap, and just go up the line like this and repeat until all of the traps have been laid down. And then I lay down my spirit. It doesn't really matter where your spirit is, because the illusionary weaponry guys won't attack the spirits. Your heroes might actually lay down their spirits first before you start laying down traps, but this isn't really a big problem, and what you can do is it'll just throw off the timing of laying traps a little bit. But usually what you can do is by the time the timer runs out and the other team starts running towards you, most of your traps are going to be recharged anyway, so you can start laying new traps as they recharge. Same with your heroes also. And what I'll usually do is I'll back up a little bit and lay the second round of traps, so that once they get past that first round, they'll go to the second round. But what they do is, once they hit that first wave of traps, usually they'll back off a bit. They'll turn around and go back a couple feet, and then they'll start casting healing sig on themselves. So just keep laying more traps inside the starting area, and you don't have to worry about your ranger heroes after this, because they'll do that automatically. They'll run around and just lay traps randomly, which, you know, works out great. And what I'll do while my traps are recharging in the meantime is I'll fire barrage at the enemies, and just make sure you don't follow them outside of the doorway, because they try to lure you out sometimes. But I like to just stay inside, and if they run, you just keep laying traps. You just stay back, keep laying traps, and don't let your heroes run out as well. Another thing you might want to do is, with barrage especially, is get a zealous bowstring on your bow, because that'll help you regain energy with barrage while you're waiting for your traps to recharge. And you'll get your rhythm after a while, and you'll learn the best places to lay traps, which is usually wherever Dankaro is standing, since they basically only attack him. Now, don't get too carried away here, like I've done a few times, where you just wipe them out in, like, you know, 5 seconds, because what'll happen is the enemies will resurrect themselves with a signet, which will allow you to get more kills from the same 4 enemies. And this is a good thing, because if you kill them all too fast before they have a chance to res each other, then you won't get the maximum number of points in the quickest time, you know? This isn't a big deal, really, if you do kill them all really quick, but when you think about the loading time between battles versus the time it takes to res their fallen comrades, it's just a little more efficient to let them make more bodies so that you can get more points. Now, after about 4 or 5 battles, depending on how many kills you get in each battle, you'll start to notice that you've stopped getting Balthazar points from kills. And then you may notice that after the battle, you don't get the 50 points from a victory and 50 additional points from a flawless victory. This would be about the time that you stop for the day. It's really pointless to go on anymore after that. So once you stop gaining the Balthazar faction, you can stop. So, you know, have fun with this. Open up some skills for your heroes or item mods or anything like that. And heck, this might even get you into playing some real PvP soon. So that'll do it for another episode of Guildcast. As you may have noticed, Lady Sinea wasn't with us this episode, but she was actually pretty busy this week, but hopefully she'll be able to join us next week for the Paragon episode, where we're going to get together with another player and talk on Skype about their experiences with that class. I'm currently running my Paragon through the game, and I just recently got her to level 20, and hopefully I can get her through at least most of the game by next week so that I can, you know, have a little bit more to talk about with that class. I know what you're thinking. You're probably thinking, Sean, when the heck are you going to stop talking about Nightfall? Well, for those of you who may not have it yet, I apologize. But what you can do is you can listen to these episodes now to entice you into getting Chapter 3. And then once you get it, you can go back and listen again. Yeah, that's it. But seriously, after the Paragon episode, I'm going to have a topic that relates back to factions again. And then after that, I'll start breaking it up a little bit across all chapters. I promise. But until next time, be sure to tell your friends and tell your guildmates about guildcast.com.